and welcome to another edition of the Capital Press Club Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Colin Campbell, and we're on episode number 7. I'm excited to have a former coworker of mine join the podcast today and someone who I volunteer with every once in a while. So I wanted to introduce her. Her name is Denise Douglas, and she's going to tell us about her profession, where she thinks journalism is today, and what she's been doing with UJW, a new responsibility of hers. Welcome to the Capital Press Club Legacy Podcast, Denise.
Oh, hey, Colin. It's a pleasure to be here. Oh, I love these topics. So bring it on. I'm excited.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, let's start with the state's attorney's office. I know that that's got to be sometimes a grueling job. You are representing the state. You've got a lot of people calling in with inquiries. When policies change, you might be the first person for them to really contact, or at least your office is really the first place where people will contact to find out information. And of course, you always have to be accurate because of the information that you're disseminating to the public. So take us on a ride a little bit. Tell us what your day is like or your week is like working for the state's attorney's office and being a main communications person for that distinction.
Yeah, Colin, I think of this as a 24/7 job, being the I've recently promoted to communications director at the state's attorney's office. Before this, I was the number 2 person. But either way, no matter what slot you're in, the primary slot or the secondary slot, it's the type of job that you really have to be committed to and you have to be ready. You have to stay informed, which for people like you and me, that's not hard because, you know, coming from a journalism background, we kind of have a sense of what's going on in our community, what's going on in the world, and, you know, what's going on internationally and at all levels. So people are constantly calling for information on all types of things. It could be court cases. It could be changes in policy, like you mentioned. Recently, recreational marijuana has become legal. And so that was a huge, huge thing for us last week in terms of reporters wanting to know so that they can relate to their audiences what that's going to mean, what that's going to look like. So I'm the person that would set up the interviews for the state's attorney to be able to handle that or answer those questions. Also, there are other attorneys in the office that can respond to that as well. So that's part of my job. But in addition to just the courthouse and the legal stuff, then we have a very busy state's attorney. She loves to be in the community. So there are community events. She is also very interested always in the legislature, because a lot of times what happens at the legislative level impacts the way they can try cases, the laws and so forth, what they can do in the courtroom. And so if there are things going on legislatively that need to be changed so that they can better impact what's going on in the courtroom and prosecute and hold people accountable that commit crimes, then she's also in Annapolis. So there's the courthouse, which is where people know we are all the time. But then there's the community and touching bases with people. What sort of changes do you want? What kind of programs that you would you like to see? So we're always in the community. And then we're always in Annapolis when our session is in terms of trying to have an impact on different laws. So to say we're busy is definitely
an understatement, isn't it?
yes, but it's fun.
And Denise, how many people work under you? Or am I not allowed to say that because now it's all about
we teams have,
and you, no one's subordinate? Yeah.
We have a graphics person, but there's a lot of support laterally because we have a community affairs team and there are people on that. So in terms of getting the job done, taking pictures, attending events, making sure the state's attorney has all the information that she needs, it's more so lateral as opposed to a triangle where I'm at the top and, you know, there are a bunch of people under me.
I see. Okay. And so tell me, how would you characterize the way that you have to communicate information? As we know, things have changed over the past several years when it has come to the modalities that people use when trying to gain information or when they're trying to share information. How would you characterize some of the different or nuanced ways that you're using social media or blogs or podcasts like this one or anything like that? How have those changes in the way we share information affected your job or the way that you execute your responsibilities?
I'm old school in the sense that I come from TV, newspaper, that sort of stuff. So I know sometimes people talk about the fact that those modes or those ways of communicating information are going to go away. I don't see that happening anytime soon. What I see is evolving. I've seen kind of how social media has taken over, especially when we as media affairs, public affairs people want to connect with certain groups, certain populations. Then, for example, we go to Twitter if we want to make sure that reporters get the information. When we want to reach out to the younger folks, the teens and young adults and so forth, we definitely go to Instagram. And then the more seasoned population, we go to Facebook. So all of that is kind of kept in mind as my office and as we convey information. Who do we want to connect with? And then we make sure that our messages are conveyed through those different social platforms and so forth. And TV and radio and newspaper, I know it has changed in the way people are consuming it, but to say it's going to completely go away, I don't see that happening for a while.
Okay. And would you say that the number or the age of people that you are really communicating with the most, do you see any consistency there? Do you see younger generations wanting to contact the state's attorney's office or anything like that? Or is it mostly still kind of an older person endeavor to know what's going on around them and what's happening legally in their area?
I think primarily it's an older person endeavor, to be honest with you. But what makes the state's attorney Aisha Brayboy unique is that she wants to break down those barriers. And so part of her goal coming into office and throughout the time in office has been to specifically try to reach out to the younger groups. So whether we are conveying our messages through social media or whether we're being out in the community, that's part of her goal, not to leave them behind, not to leave seniors behind, to be able to communicate with those who need it and for them to understand the justice system. So everyone in some way is impacted by the justice system, whether it's good or bad. And so knowing our rights, knowing what is what and so forth is all important. And even though might be older people like me or my mom or something more interested in the work that she does, she definitely wants to change that perception and make sure the younger folks are on board as well.
And so what would you say some of your greatest challenges are when you're doing this?
Great question. You know what? I think similar to when I was a reporter fighting the clock. As a reporter, you're trying to get information and convey it on a newscast for a live shot or for a story as quickly as you can, as accurately as you can. And to be honest, in the state's attorney's office, it's pretty much the same. We get inquiries and a reporter needs that information quickly. And so I have to be sure to turn it around, get all the details and convey it to them quickly and accurately. So time tends to be not always on our side. And then I think another challenge would be that we want to kind of break down the barrier and reach those younger folks. And that sometimes is, okay, so how do we do that? And we've had to try to get creative, use more videos, use different strategies that we think would be appealing to them. So there are definitely things that, you know, we're always working on.
Could we see the state's attorney's office information one day on TikTok or something like that? Or not really? Because, you know, TikTok is under some controversy right now, too. Or is that a direction that is sometimes discussed about some of these newer forms of social media that are emerging? Almost like Lemonade is another one.
Absolutely. I mean, I think she would love to do that. I think she would be game for that. She's very open to trying new things to reach new audiences and to get her message across creatively. So I think it could happen one day. We'll just have to put it on the to-do list and make it happen. But yeah, you know, that's one of the really good things about working for her and conveying messages for her. She's always open to seeing how things can be done differently and be more effective.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, you may have to do it before it gets banned. You have a number of states that are trying to ban TikTok. Of course, you know, we know that they've been under a lot of questioning on the Hill from legislators about the aims and endeavors of what TikTok is. They believe that it could be a Trojan horse for malware or spying or things like that. But it is good to see when organizations do want to be progressive in the way that they're sharing information because of the way that the landscape is changing and the way that we are paying attention to different areas of sourcing, where we get our sourcing from, how tied and connected we are to these smartphones, right? That are seemingly only always a few inches away from us. And so people tune into all kinds of social media. And so I know that this is an area that you particularly pay attention to because of your connection with younger and aspiring journalists, like the Urban Journalism Workshop, which you have headed this past year. Tell me about what that was like, because this was your first time doing this. Great job. I was a part of it as well. And I want to just openly say you did a tremendous job leading that effort and trying to teach young journalists the right methods and preparing them for the future of journalism and the professional world. But tell us what your experience was like doing that.
It was amazing. And let me say thank you for being a part of it. Hopefully you will be a part of it again next year and all of our other amazing mentors, because having you all there to relay your experiences, support the students, support the program. UJW has been around, Colin, 37 years because of people like you, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to have been able to be a co-coordinator along with Phil Lewis, who was my co-coordinator. But it was amazing. I mean, we had 14 students. We created a newscast. We created several online stories, and we created a little mini podcast. Next year, hopefully, we can expand it and make it bigger or better. But I think that UJW is one of the great ways that students can get hands-on experience. They get to interact with, you know, journalists who have had great careers. And there aren't a lot of programs like that around anymore. So it was my pleasure to be able to co-coordinate. I'm looking forward to next year to having even more students. Like, we normally shoot for about 30 students, but even half is quite a handful. And so it generally works out in terms of the number of students we have, along with the mentors that we have to help and facilitate the entire 8 weeks. But each year we're just going to strive to do more and more and to have more students in there. So it's amazing.
That's great. That's right. And you co-coordinated with Philip Lewis, you said, and it was also his first time being a co-coordinator. How did you guys team up?
Well, interestingly enough, last year, the session was online because we were still coming out of COVID. And so Trina, who was the coordinator at that time, asked us to just put together a session on social media. And so Phil and I met doing that. And then this year, Trina wanted to, you know, move on and do different things with her spare time. And she asked us both to jump on board to see if we could do it. And it worked out well. One thing that Phil helped put together that I know the students are going to remember forever and ever was the trip to the White House. And so during that trip, they were able to hear journalists who talked about their experience covering the White House, covering President Biden, as well as hear from the media relations person there at the White House. And so that was definitely one of the highlights of this past session. But I know that they're going to take away just a lot more. I mean, we touched on radio, we touched on newspaper, we touched on TV, and we touched on, am I leaving anything out? So we were able to touch on a lot of different areas. Each week, as you remember, we focus on one specific area. Let's say it's TV, and we take a deep dive into specifically the language, how you put a story together, the do's and don'ts, and different aspects of TV that are important for the young journalists to know. So, I mean, if it's TV this week, it might be newspaper the following week or radio the following week. And then once we kind of lay the groundwork with the theory and the verbiage and so forth and so on, we give them an opportunity to jump in and put stories together and try their hand at it. One thing that I think I'm going to change next year, we spend a whole lot of time doing the classroom aspect of it, but hopefully next year we can do more hands-on, because I think with this generation, having them involved works a lot better. They tend to catch on really quickly when you explain something to them, and then, you know, just having them put that into practice, I think, will help and help the messages and the information stick with them. It doesn't take them very long to catch on. So I think we can move quickly to the hands-on part of it.
That's right. And I think you had a print person there too, right? A young woman who also did an article as well, right?
Yes. Yes. We had several articles. We had several articles that were online. One was about the coach at Howard University and his victories and how his career trajectory kind of brought him to where he is at this point. And then we had another article about school violence and what can be done about it. I mean, and these are topics that they pick themselves. I mean, we do give a certain degree of guidance, but we give them an opportunity to come up with topics that they will be passionate about. And then we help them get from point A to point B or Z or however you want it to look at it. But yeah. And I know you had a great time. You were a great mentor. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, sure. And so back to what you were saying a little bit earlier, you're talking about how you're more an OG. You're probably one of the people who have seen the modalities change throughout the years. And of course, we're in an information age, a digital information age. And I know that that also resonates with aspiring journalists, particularly those who are young and those who grew up with tablets in their hands, those who grew up with high-speed internet, broadband, those kinds of modalities that we didn't necessarily grow up with until and really get intimate with until much later on. What have you seen as far as the way they approach their media? For example, when I was starting out, it was a lot of pounding the pavement, lots of phone calls, right? And learning phone etiquette and how to ask questions through the phone a lot of times. But nowadays, it's a little bit different. If I wanted to look at a role model, someone to watch, I'd wait for the evening news to come on and watch them and see how their technique is. That's not really the same approach anymore. How do you address this? And what has the change been like for you?
You know, you make so many really great points there, Colin, because I know when I started out in TV news, this was before we connected at BET. But when I started out, the big push was go to Peoria, basically a small market, get your feet wet, make your mistakes, and then come back to a DC, a New York, an LA, or whatever the case is, and be that superstar kind of thing. But nowadays, you know, people are starting out in the DC market, in the New York market, and in terms of pounding the pavement and figuring out how to get sources and knowing the right questions to ask, it's really interesting to kind of see that it seems like they're relying less on the experience that you would have learned in a small market and maybe just getting a lot of that on-the-job training possibly, because honestly, I don't see a lot of, you know, that part of it where you go to the small market and you learn everything. So a lot of it seems to be more as you go along. Well, clearly, you know, through the education that they get from school, but you know, in terms of the way how it was done before, it's just been a big drastic change. And getting sources from Twitter and different locations like that is where I see people doing it more so than the old-fashioned way, maybe calling the police department, doing the beat calls, and is there anything going on, that sort of thing. It's just a change, and whether it's good or bad, I guess it really depends on what's needed at the time. And I think the wave has changed, and what they're doing now fits what needs to be done. So even though I like the old method of doing things, meaning beat calls and, you know, maybe going out to lunch with somebody at the police department in order to build a relationship and be able to get good stories and so forth, it's just changed. I mean, the internet and so forth has made things a lot easier for these young journalists. And I think they rely on that more so. And what they learn on the job to really propel them and get the stories that they need and so forth.
Yeah, one thing I noticed is the expedient editing, right? Just putting stories together, being able to edit on a phone, for example. That is something that is almost mind-blowing how quickly that can be done, especially when we think of all the equipment that used to be used before to do it, right? When we had more linear editing and we had stacks of different decks to put together one story, thick, bulky tapes, all of that, right? And now everything can be done on just one device. But at the same time, because everything is done so quickly, are we setting ourselves up for more miscommunication, inaccurate journalism, journalism that is not quite ripe yet, but is thrown out for public consumption already before it's really interrogated fully and complete? Have you noticed any deleterious effects of quick journalism and easily accessible journalism? Or maybe it's not even journalism, just information sharing.
Really, really, really nice, deep question. I think most newsrooms still have a really good checks and balances system. So a lot of misinformation that we might see out there might not really be from a reputable source. It might be from the more citizen journalists, because we have producers, we have editors, we have a news director, we have different people. And I know when I was in the actual newsroom, we had several people looking at a story before I would go voice it and track it and actually put the actual news story together. So I think in a traditional newsroom, the checks and balances system that is in place prevents a lot of that. I'm sure we can probably dig deep and find examples where information gets out quicker than it needs to be because of the speed that we need to get things out via Twitter, live shots, all that sort of stuff. But I would say influencers may be the ones who are quick to put out information without actually checking it. Because I think as journalists, we are very protective, very careful about accuracy, despite the fact that we have to get information out carefully. I have in my current role as the communications director, I have reporters call me and then they'll call back, "Hey, I just want to make sure I have this right," or "Can you run this by, you know, somebody in your organization," or something like that. So speed and the internet and everything that we see in terms of social media might be fighting for our journalistic integrity or fighting against it at times. But I think if you're a real journalist and you really care about the profession and so forth and so on, and you really care about your career, you're going to take that extra step to double check the information before you even pass it on for your producer to look at your script and so forth. And then that producer is going to have a really protective eye. And then whoever else might have to kind of take another look at it along the way.
Yeah, we are used to that system where we come up with the story as reporters. We have the story. We edit it ourselves. Then usually a producer may look it over, or a managing editor may look it over before it goes to air or before it goes to print. When you're an influencer, you skip a lot of those steps, right? Yeah. And so let me ask you this, a question to which there is really no wrong answer, but I wanted to get your feel on this. For a bit of time, there has been the opinion that journalists should be licensed, much like you have various practitioners who are licensed. In the age where influencers are growing, that's not an area of information sharing that is going to shrink anytime soon, especially as new platforms are being created. Do you think that journalists should be licensed? And I have to apologize to our listeners if they hear explosions in the background, as probably already guessed, we're doing this on the eve of Independence Day. So you may hear some popping and explosions in the background as I'm talking. And hopefully that's not too distracting to you. But when we look at influencers and the way that they're able to skip some of these checks and balances, also engage in partisan rhetoric or deliver information based on their own selective biases or information silos, should there be a clear distinction between the conventional journalist who may have been trained and has gone through the steps of what both sides is, or what objectivity is, or being curious about other points of view and perspectives are, or would that impinge upon the freedom of speech and for anyone to just go out and put out content?
I'm trying to think of licensing, if that would make a difference, because I think the public knows the difference between influencers and journalists who are trained and journalists who are committed to the profession. You know what? I don't think it would hurt, but is it necessary? I don't think it would hurt. In addition to us going to J school, is, you know, Colin, a lot of us, most of us, the majority of us as journalists, take internships. We do internships along the line, and we do, also, there's National Association of Black Journalists, there's Society of Professional Journalists. So what I'm saying is that we're constantly sharpening our skills, and we're constantly, many of us are trying to become better as we grow and as we go throughout our career. So to some degree, I feel that some of that safeguards us, and that some of that provides an informal level of licensing, because we're going to seminars that when we go to NABJ and Society of Professional Journalists and similar organizations, different seminars that provide us with information that keep us sharp. To kind of sum that up, it wouldn't hurt, but I don't think necessarily that I would push for it, because most good journalists have gone through internships, they have good mentors, they go to yearly conventions, different seminars and career enrichment type things that provide a level of insulation that help us as we go throughout our career.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that totally, because if you are continually sharpening your skills and adjusting for the media environment, then you're already trying to keep ahead, right? You're already trying to keep out in front of the changing dynamics in journalism. I also feel, though, that influencers are the ones that, because they're not tethered by an institution, they can kind of independently go out and find the newest types of technology or the newest ways to spread information. For example, they've been talking about a new platform called Lemonade, which they think might rival TikTok in the future. And so that might be a conversation in upcoming months as we deal with the emergence of the generative performative trainers like ChatGPT and how that will change the media landscape. We've already seen some companies that have engaged in this type of, I guess, a basic form of artificial intelligence or narrow artificial intelligence in order to spread the news. Where do you see the future of journalism going if you were to prognosticate a little bit?
Wow. I think, like I mentioned at the beginning, I don't see traditional journalism completely going away. Whether or not it will have the same strength and power in the next 15, 20 years, that remains to be seen. In terms of influencers, they will probably continue to grow in influence. You know, it's interesting because there's so much to think about. And I know as journalists, we've kind of talked about this before, and it seems like we can have a whole show on just this. But yeah. I don't see traditional journalism going away. I do see social media and, as you mentioned, different platforms continuously growing and allowing for different channels that bona fide journalists can spread their messages and their stories through. I don't think that influencers will ever take over, or citizen journalists will ever take over as true journalists, because I think the community, America, relies on people who have been trained and people who know what they're doing and people who they can trust on a day to day. I think when you look at an influencer, they're not necessarily striving for facts, or they're not necessarily striving to be a journalist, but they're striving to maybe spread entertainment, or they're striving to make a name for themselves. And I don't think journalists are, I mean, people want to be known as good storytellers and so forth, but I don't think they're necessarily striving to be famous or to have themselves out in front of the story. The story is sort of where they're going with it. So to kind of prognosticate, as you say, journalism, as we know it, will stick around for a long time. The different social channels will continue to grow and will provide us channels to be able to continue to spread our messages. And I think journalism as we know it, I don't see it changing. I mean, because people are always going to be looking to a core group of people for good, solid, quality information. So the channels will probably change and shift and so forth. But I think people will always want to know that their journalists have been trained, their journalists are dedicated, and so forth and so on. And we'll continue to see journalists as a group, you know, for the near future.
All right. Well, there you have it. You heard it from Denise Douglas. Your jobs as journalists are safe for the time being. You don't have to worry too much as long as you stay trained up, as they say. So I want to thank Denise for joining us on the Capital Press Club Legacy Podcast. I want to thank our producer, who you don't get to see on camera, Derek Kenny, in the background, clicking those buttons, making sure we look good. And I hope you join us next time. We will see you or hear you, or we will be presenting to you very soon on a podcast near you. Thanks for joining us.